Options Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Amy.
For those of you who care to, please join us in opening the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two.
Three.
Okay. Please welcome our panel this evening. Harmony and David. I will read the first paragraph on page 60. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And see that God could and would if he were sought.
I'm Harmony, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Harmony.
Very happy to be here. I want to welcome you if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, what this is talking about here is what we have read up to this point is. Up until page 60 is a lot about alcoholism. The chapter to the agnostic, which talks about a lot about our relationship with God and our unmanageability. And then the personal adventures before and after. And for me, those were the personal adventures before and after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and learning about these things and learning about alcoholism and what those things. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I like to drink. I like to drink in excess. I drink too much alcohol. I get myself in tons of trouble. I drive when I'm drinking. I tend to get loud and violent and put my hands on other people when I'm drinking. And I also had periods of sobriety where I tried really hard to not drink because I didn't want to have any of those consequences and I didn't want to live that way. And so I would try to stay sober on my own, and I would get into these deep, dark despair, depressions, and severe irritability, and just feeling like there's absolutely no way that my life worked with or without alcohol. And that was the shape that I came to and started reading this book and doing this stuff. And these 3 points here was what, by the time I got to this stage in the book or this stage in the steps, this is where I was at. I was convinced that I was an alcoholic and that I could not manage my own life. And by the time that I got here, I was definitely convinced of that point. It wasn't any human being that showed me that. It was my alcoholism and trying to live drunk or sober that kind of beat me into submission, into understanding this letter A point that we just read. The second is that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and I came to understand that from being in AA and listening to people talk and listening and really coming to understand the true nature of alcoholism, which that this is pure insanity. There is no logic behind it. There will come a time where I will have this completely insane thought to drink despite all the consequences. And there isn't any human power, any drug, any program apart from AA that can keep me from walking down that same path over and over and over again. And I had tried human powers. I had tried my power. I tried my parents' power. I tried therapists. I had tried all sorts of things. And then see that God could and would if he were sought. And that is where I was at step 3. And I can't say that I 100% believe that God could do it if I sought him, but I heard all the other alcoholics talking about it, and I saw the people that were like, I was a Skid Row drunk and now I'm a lawyer. Yeah. Like, and I heard them talking about it, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I could have this too. Although I at this stage in my steps, I didn't believe it 100% through and through.
Thanks, Arlene. Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
David.
Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's October 24th, 1989. I have a home group. It's the Simple Actions Group, where we all are right now. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other men in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is one of those things that we read at every meeting, and I don't even hear it anymore, you know? Like, rarely have we seen a person fail, and I start thinking about, you know, lunch, what I'm going to do later, you know? But our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures, I love that they call it personal adventures, you know? If I ever get drunk, I don't want you to say that I relapsed. I want you to say I'm out on a personal adventure. I mean, if you could talk about the stuff that I did and categorize it as a personal adventure, I mean, that's really showing it in the best possible light. So these three pertinent ideas that we're alcoholic and can't manage our own lives, you know, and I hear, you know, I'm not one of these people who got here and thought this was a good idea, you know. I didn't walk in here and feel like I found my family, that, hey, look at these nice people drinking coffee and stuff. I didn't want to be here. I had no trouble. I hear people talking about step one. I finally admitted I was an alcoholic. I used to admit I was an alcoholic on a bar stool. You know, this is what I do, bro. I like the juice. And what I couldn't admit to was that I was powerless over alcohol, that it really wasn't up to me whether I drank or not. And you guys told me that day one. I rolled up here. I was 22 years old. And I had been awake for about 72 hours straight. I was hostile, incoherent, looking for help. I wasn't looking for God, and I wasn't looking for 12 steps, and I wasn't looking for your phone number. But my life had been burnt to the ground to the point where I was like, something's got to change. And I walked into my first AA meeting, and you guys told me about these three pertinent ideas. And the way that you guys told it to me was, if you're an alcoholic, David, it has nothing to do with whether you lived under a bridge or whether you got into trouble or you drove your car when you weren't supposed to drive your car, whether you can't keep your hands to yourself. I can check all those boxes personally, but they told me that it doesn't matter. It matters what happens when you drink alcohol. And if you're an alcoholic, once you start, you can't stop. And when you stop, that's the thing that got me. When I stop, I cannot stay stopped. I'm walking around with something that alcohol cures something in me. Alcohol relieves something in me. It solves a problem within me that I don't have the natural ability to solve. All that restlessness and anxiety and fear and worry and agitation. I don't know about y'all, but when I'm on a long period of dry, I have a tendency to be around people that don't appreciate the uniqueness that is David, and they don't treat me very well, you know. And I work for idiots. And how did I even get in this relationship? Why do I even live in this town? Okay, I'm the only one. All right. But that I'm an alcoholic, and what that really means is I don't have a drinking problem. What that really means is it's not up to me whether I drink or not. And I can't manage my own life. And a lot of people talk about unmanageability as it's connected to the crazy stuff that we do when we're drinking, and I don't think it has anything to do with that. We were all sitting around in a meeting after the meeting one night, and everybody was kind of talking about the horrendous things that they'd done when they were drunk, you know. And it's like, you know, one time I was in a van that drove through the window of a 7-Eleven, you know, while it was open. And I was in the candy aisle, you know, and yelling at the driver to put it in reverse. You know, we're all laughing. We had stories like that, and the tragic ones and the embarrassing ones and the disgusting ones. And everybody had those stories. And somebody said to my sponsor at the time, "What's the craziest thing you ever did when you were wasted?" He said, "The craziest thing that I ever did when I was wasted was knowing that all that stuff was going to happen, and I took a drink anyway." That started to click with me what it really means to be an alcoholic. I can't keep from drinking. I can't leave it alone. And no human power. You know, I spent a lot of time I got a lot of hours on bar stools and psychiatrist couches, looking for some human power to relieve me of this thing that I've got, you know. Self-help books, big fan. I'm kind of hoping I'm going to meet my next relationship in the self-help aisle at Barnes & Noble. You're broken too? I can help you, you know. So she's going to fix me, the job's going to fix me, the money's going to fix me, psychiatrist's going to fix me. Some sort of new piece of information that I didn't have before is going to land and stick with me, and everything's going to change after that. And I was so God-resistant when I got here that I really thought that you guys were talking about the Bible when you said the big book. I really thought that all this was sort of a thinly veiled Christian organization, you know, that if I stuck around here long enough, you'd finally tell me what the real book was and what the real mission was and all that. And I guess I haven't made the cut yet because nobody's ever done anything like that for me. But the guy that really helped me with that, he said, you know, that God could and would if he were sought. Are you willing to seek? Are you willing to look? Are you willing to open your mind? It doesn't have anything to do with faith, understanding, even belief, you know. Basically, the guy told me, are you willing to move from the there is no God to maybe there's a God? And I was able to make that leap. Yeah, okay, I'll be open-minded enough to say maybe. And he said, we're just going to seek God by doing the rest of these steps. It's already been laid out. We're not going to surprise you with anything. We're just going to seek God through the rest of the steps. So, I don't know. The reason I make a big deal out of that is the amount of pain and delusion and frustration and despair and arguments and mental machinations that I had to go through. I to just get to that point where I was like, yeah, whatever I got, I can't solve it. Help. You know, that was a 10-year trip that I just condensed into about 6 minutes. Thanks.
We're continuing on page 60. Being convinced, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, We are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
So I think one of the mistakes that we fall into by when we look at this paragraph is thinking, you know, that this is about being a control freak, and it's not that at all. I don't think that people in my life would necessarily call me a control freak, but I definitely try to live my life by self-propulsion. And it's, when I was drinking, what it was all about was arranging the good time. Arranging the booze and arranging the good time. And so all of these things would apply in that I did not know it at the time. It's all looking back in retrospect, but it started as soon as I woke up in the morning. It was replaying the drunk or the party from the night before, the fun times, the escapades, the replaying kind of like the calculation of like, okay, it was like four beers before I smoked a joint, and then there was like six beers after that, and that seemed to be a really good combo that worked and didn't cause a lot of drama. Like, and that started as soon as I woke up in the morning. And then it was like, how am I going to find the buyer because I was underage, and who are we going to invite this time because so-and-so really like was a Debbie Downer the whole entire time. She's not coming along this time. And we would just, it would just go and go like this. And I am like that, drunk or sober. I definitely am. But what I really had to come to terms with is that my whole life ran around alcohol. And whether, like, if it seemed like people were going to go along with it and they were going to go along with the big plan and everything was going to be great, then I was kind, I was considerate, I was patient. I was like, yeah, come along, get in, you know, you can ride with us, blah, blah, blah. If it looked like you were going to get in the way of my party, I was egotistical, selfish, dishonest, And I was those things often to try and get the party started or get what I needed to get alcohol. And those types of manipulations did not stop just because I got sober. Then it became about, how's Harmony going to be happy and get what she wants? And it could seem like it doesn't. I just want everyone to be happy. I just want things to be this way so that I never feel bad. And it's an impossible way to live, and it just makes for more drinking. So,
yeah, the B thing that I didn't mention, probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I'm my favorite human power. You know, when all those other things don't work, I'm my go-to guy. I am definitely by default self-directed. I want to know what I think. I want to know what I'm interested in. I want to know how my plans are going to work out. You know, I don't toss and turn at night worrying that things aren't going to work out for you. It's me I'm concerned about. And I've come to see that as my default mode, you know, drunk or sober. Absolutely. And he's asking us to consider that any life run on that basis can hardly be a success. Well, I'm a tough sell on that. You know, first it says it's a requirement, and I got to be convinced of it. Well, sell it to me, you know. But he makes this actor analogy, and I love the actor analogy because it's like It's like, and I'm this way in my life. I'm the guy. All I ever wanted to do is go to Broadway, right? I make it to Broadway, and I've got a little bit part, right? I'm in a production where I got to go in the second act or in the second number or the second measure or the second beat. I get to ring the triangle on a Broadway stage. That's my job, right? I could be grateful, excited, happy to be with these people doing this thing that I've always wanted, you know? But no, I think that I should be directing this play. I'm not impressed with my peers. You've got a bigger part than I've got. I want to do a triangle solo. Seen that? Have you seen that Geico commercial? One of my sponsees sent that to me. This is you. Ah. So that's me. And I know that, you know, when I first read that, the first time I ever read that, he may be kind, considerate, patient, generous. I'm like, oh, yeah, this book gets me. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, and selfish. And just like Harmony said, I got nothing new there. I learned when I was a little kid that you get more flies with honey, right? So I'll be nice, you know, until I don't get what I want. Thanks.
We're going to continue on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
I think this is one of the hardest things to grasp as a newcomer. It was for me. I really did not see that I was a creator of so many of the problems, and so and a creator of the ick that was in my life, and that that it all was about me trying to wrest some type of satisfaction and happiness out of my drinking, and then later on out of my sobriety. I would have been really, really offended had anyone called me, you know, selfish or self-centered, which they did all the time. I mean, just to tell you, I regularly stole from all my family members to the point where they all had locks on their doors in my house, and there was no line between your stuff and my stuff. It's all my stuff. And I was entitled to all of your stuff because you're my family. So I would, and just the, you know, just the insults that would be hurled at me from my other family members when they would, you know, go into their room and realize that I had, you know, raided their money jars or taken whatever various things that it was. And also, you know, whenever we had, drunk or sober, whenever we had some kind of event going on, it was always about me and whether or not I was enjoying myself. I remember being 12, and I was mad at my parents that we were in the wilderness instead of Disneyland. And so I threw a fit literally the entire time that we were on this like 25-mile bike ride. And I don't know how they didn't just leave me in the woods the way that I was acting. I mean, it was absolutely horrible. But I have been that way my entire life. And But I would not have seen it. All I would have told anybody was that life didn't treat me right. I got a bad deck of cards, and that people were out to get me, and that life itself was just horrible. That it was no matter what you do, you're going to get SHIT, and that's all you're going to get. And that is a really, really horrible way to live in constant victimization and feeling bad for oneself. I ended up in a very hopeless place where there were times throughout my drinking where I thought I could rise again, and with some exertion of will and some trying really hard on whether, you know, a test or a swim meet or a new event that was going to go really awesome, then I would muster up the will to fight again. And there came a time where I had no more will to fight, because I thought that it was just going to stay on this endless cycle of suck forever. And I looked at the left, like I was 18, and I looked at the 75 years of the rest of my life as just going to continue to be this inward, downward cycle of suck. And thank God for this chapter that told me that, guess what, the problem's you, because that means that there was something that could be fixed.
Yeah. Did you ever get profoundly angry with somebody for not believing a perfectly good lie that you were telling them? Am I the only one? I mean, if that's not selfish, I actually be mad at you. It's plausible. That could have happened. You don't trust me. So I'm self-directed by default. I'm running my own life. It's what I do. Oh, the other thing, if you are new and you didn't pick up on that reference, like, it took me a long time. I came here, it was hard enough for me to admit that I had a drinking problem or that I had a problem with alcohol, you know? But you guys keep telling me, yeah, you don't have a problem with alcohol. You're an alcoholic. You have alcoholism. It's different than a drinking problem. If you have a drinking problem, you don't have to come here. You just stop drinking. You'll be fine. So what happens to me is when I stop drinking, that's when we really get, that's when the circus really comes to town. You know? And so you take the alcohol out of the alcoholic, all you're left with is the ick. Yeah. I love that reference. Sorry. So I'm self-directed. The show's not coming off. I'm trying to run it. I got very distinct ideas about how things should go. My motives are good, you know. I know how everybody should act. I know how my wife should behave. My children should behave. I know this meeting should stay on topic, for instance, for the benefit of everyone. You know, I got ideas about stuff. It's not working out my way, so I get frustrated. I used to describe myself as impatient. And I realized recently that I'm not particularly impatient. I have lots of evidence where I'm quite patient in my life in a lot of areas. What I can't tolerate is even a little bit of frustration. I just, broken shoelace, send me right over the edge. You know, it's like I've been holding it together until the shoelace broke. So yeah, what's my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker? I'm just a guy. And it says, I love the line where it says, admitting he may be somewhat at fault. You know, I've heard that before. When an alcoholic is absolutely convinced he's dead wrong, the most you'll ever get out of him is, he might have a point. Yeah. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure other people are more to blame, so I get angry, self-pity. Am I not just a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? So I can ramp up the kindness, or I can ramp up the anger. I'm just another selfish person trying to get what he wants. My motives are good, I assure you. And then I can't help but produce confusion rather than harmony. I think about just a little parable, and this is stone cold sober. I'm at home. I'm feeling lonely. I'm feeling a little disconnected from my wife. Kind of missing her, kind of wishing that she and I could maybe pay more attention to each other. We've been real busy. We got three kids. We both got jobs, and I'd like to get together with her. And I'm feeling a little sorry for myself and a little bit lonely, you know. And then she walks in the door, and what comes out of my mouth is, you don't care about me. It's So now she's got to walk into that and defend herself, you know, instead of just being like straight up with the idea that I'm feeling a little lonely. I'd like to spend some time with you. That would be the simple truth. But I got to come at you with an accusation that you got to defend now. You don't care about me. What? We've been married for 23 years. She knows she's living with a crazy person. Thanks.
Moving on to page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Another way I'd like to illuminate the selfishness for you is, we alcoholics, addicts, whatever you want, like alcoholics, we have this ridiculous entitlement to be loaded where other people are just dealing with life. You know, alcohol, like, other people are just going to do their day. They're just going to do adulting. They're just going to do responsibility. Like, but we feel this deep-seated entitlement to take the edge off because I can't deal with it like you people can. And I've worked in the ER for longer than I want to. And just dealing with us. Like over and over and over again. I mean, the level of entitlement of like, please hit me with some morphine and some Benadryl. No, I'm sorry, but you're not entitled to any of that. Like, Mr. Addict, alcoholic, you know? And my sponsors and sponsees, like my sponsor was one of the first people to ever stand up to that beast and say, guess what? You're not entitled to any of these things that you think you are. And you're not entitled to an easier life just because you're sensitive. And because you had that such and such and such going on. And when I started to really see these things as they were in black and white and really see myself for who I really was, which was completely self-will run riot, for me, I was not able to get any sobriety underneath my belt at all until I started taking some direction from other alcoholics. As long as I was bulking or fighting or rebelling against something that somebody was telling me, I wasn't able to stay sober. It wasn't until I came in here and completely did everything that my sponsor told me to do that I started to rack up some time. Because self-will for me it stands in the way of me and God, and even to this day, like me resisting whatever it is that whatever movement that God is moving in my life will send me bring me out of that grace that I live in every day. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Like if those memes on Facebook about like speak your truth or whatever it is that comes up all the time, like if I like some of those things like I really believe in, you know, or you know, like some of the things that I learned in church as a child, I really God's honest believed in, but it did not solve the selfishness problem. And when I got to this point in the steps, I was like, how do I stop this selfishness problem? Like, because I had been sober for a while. I saw it over and over and over again in my life that I saw it throughout my drinking. I saw that this beast that I didn't want to be anymore, that just wanted alcohol constantly and like me. Like I did not know how I would how was I going to be any different. And I could not reduce any of this self-centeredness on my own. And when I got to this point in the steps, in step three, like I understood exactly what it said here. I had to have God's help to be any different. And throughout my sobriety, I've hit that stage over and over again, because there comes things up in sobriety where it's completely unacceptable to me that life is this way. Absolutely unacceptable. And there's only one path for me to take, and that is for me to reduce my self-centeredness and my will and my way in order for me to it to become acceptable for me and for me to continue on in my like happy, serene bubble of and I have a choice to make at those times. Like, I can surrender to what God's will and how things are right now, or I can keep fighting for my way, which is just always painful, to be honest. So
this page 62, one of my sponsors had me read it every single day for 30 days and talk to him about something I found on the page, and I just thought, God, you know, just because you're an idiot doesn't mean I have to act like one. One page, you know. And this thing, it absolutely gives us the keys to the kingdom here. I mean, he tells me what the very root of my problem is this selfishness. He gives me the urgency with which to take care of it, you know, and the priority on it. If I don't take care of it, it's going to kill me. And then it tells me I can't do it. I can't get rid of it myself. My go-to guy, me, David. I got it. I'll figure it out, man. That I was gonna tattoo on my forehead. You won't figure it out, David. You know, just so I can look at it while I'm shaving. That's what I want to do. I want to figure everything out. Just give me some time, man. You know, so I can figure it out. So I got to get rid of it, or it's gonna kill me, and I can't get rid of it. I have to have God's help. And I argue with that, man. I argue with the concept of selfishness. No, man, I'm a good guy. Yeah, yeah. You know, you're not much, but you're all you think about. Yeah, that's true. But my first sponsor, I wish I could have videotapes of these conversations to know how they actually went. I only know how they went in my head. But for whatever reason, this man, the very first man who tried to take me through this book and tried to teach me some of these things and show me these steps and set my feet on a path that really goes somewhere, he stopped talking at one point and he says, David, you know what a yeah but is? I was like, no, is that some Navy term or something? I don't know what a yeah but is. He goes, it's a little furry creature about this big. It's got one leg shorter than the other one. Just goes around in circles all day long going, yeah but, yeah but, yeah but, yeah but. Never gets anything accomplished. And I swear to you, I sat there and I thought, Why is he telling me this?
That's rude.
You know? But I'm just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But anyway, back to me. Thanks.
Still on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom.
One of the examples that I like to use from my recent life is like I have two kids. They're back there. I'm surprised I haven't had to yell at them. I think it's because somebody else is doing it for me right now. But you know, I want to be the type of mom that, like, you know, like we're just kind of always smiling and laughing, and I, you know, I make cookies and we do crafts, and like I, you know, I drive you places and I show up to your soccer games and pick you up from school, and there's like no trouble or chaos, and like the disciplining part is not my favorite, let's just say, you know. And and so, you know, like I, like more recently I was like, okay, you know, I like a really great thing to do is like for them to have like a homemade breakfast in the morning, right? I'm gonna get up and I'm gonna make them homemade breakfast. They're gonna have like waffles and eggs and bacon and sausage or whatever every day, like, or as much as I can pull it off. Like it's a completely loving thing to do. Like, and my boys do love their breakfast, but they do not love it if I am like this. Here you go. Finally got it done. You know, like it's, they could care absolutely less at all about like how, about the stupid breakfast. Like if, like that right now, that's not at all how they're even feeling love. Like they feel love if I sit down and I play with them, or if I sit down at the table with them, no matter like what is on the table. And I know it sounds so absolutely corny, but that is how detailed I have to be surrendered. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, you know, no matter like how this day is going to go, whether they're jumping off the beds or swinging off the doors, like God is the director and I am his principal, and I am here to do whatever it is that falls in front of me. I learned that training in Alcoholics Anonymous from the very beginning. It's applicable now to my home life, but it started in the very beginning of my sobriety, where the first question that I had to answer was what meeting I was going to. The second question, you know, was I worked my job schedule around my meetings in my early sobriety. I did not have a car, and so then I would have to work on getting a ride and how I was going to get there. And then other things like that, like my phone started ringing with alcoholics very early on in my sobriety, and it would be like, okay, Harmony, you're riding with these people, you're going here, you're doing that. And over time, I have learned how to physically turn my will over to God. Yes, it does involve a prayer in the morning. But turning my life over to God is an actual like physical action, and it there are things that come up that I absolutely don't want to do, that come up that interrupt my day, they interrupt my plan for the day, they seem like more that I can handle. I was married to another alcoholic, and it took a long time for me to accept that he couldn't keep up with my plan. You know, like I was full speed ahead on married with children, and we're getting a damn backsplash, buddy. Like full speed ahead, long before I was willing or able to accept that he absolutely could not participate in this at the level that I needed him, that I needed to. Like meanwhile, I have this other human being who's sick and dying next to me, like in bed, like from alcoholism, his own alcoholism, and I was like, what about the backsplash? You know, and my life just doesn't work under those circumstances. And when like I hit enough pain, what I get down on my knees and I say, you know, God, I say to God that you are the director, you are my principal, you're my father. I don't know what is best for me. I don't know how to arrange this life to feel good about it. I don't know how to arrange this life so that I don't hurt people, and so that we don't all end up sick and suffering. And I need you to show me, and I need you to change me and change my heart so that I'm not so self-centered. And you know, even just this week, I had the most horrible thing you can think of show up on my doorstep on Valentine's Day morning, and I had like a choice that like I can handle this problem, and I'm not going to go into details because I can't, but it's you know, I can handle this problem, and I can take care of another human being that needs to be taken care of, or like I can just go about my business and let it become somebody else's problem. And I have learned that the best experiences come out of me just saying, okay, this is the wild roller coaster you have me on today, God, let's go. You know, I'm here. Let's go. Like whatever your will is, whatever I need to do, I'm just a servant to your will, because not because I'm some awesome moral person. It's because I just know that the results and are so much better when I do it like that.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, this is there's a couple of things in here that are really important, and they changed my life once they became kind of clear to me, and maybe it'll change a few years from now. But I think about I like to think about surrender. We talk in lofty terms around here sometimes, and you go to AA meetings and they talk about, you'll hear people talk about that that they can determine God's will. You know, if the voice comes from here, I don't listen to it. If it comes from down here, I know it's God's will, you know. All that stuff freaks me out a little. I usually go get a cup of coffee at that point. But this idea of surrender, too, is not particularly complex. And I like just in military terms, surrender is, if I'm surrendering, I am laying down, giving up all methods of self-defense. I can't keep a knife in my boot. I can try. They might kill me. They find it. But I'm giving up all methods of self-defense. And what do I use for my own normal self-defense? Blaming you, making it your problem, rationalization, justification, any number of neurotic machinations of a nutty person like me to run my life. It's your fault. I've been treated unfairly. I got to lay all of that down. Right? Am I willing to give that up and look at it in a different way? He says this is the how and the why of it. First, we have to quit playing God. Well, what does that even mean? I mean, I really need to, for it to have any value for me, I've got to find the value in it, you know? And he says, that's the first thing I got to do is quit playing God. Well, I'm not deluded. I don't think I make the moon go around the earth and the earth go around the sun. I didn't create all of this. I know that I'm not God. Right? I like to sit in his chair, you know, and direct. I can help him when he's obviously paying attention to other stuff, you know. The simple way that I've learned to understand it is that me playing God is David thinking he knows what's best. I think I know how this ought to go down. Whatever it is. Just give me a situation. I got opinions about it. And that's just me thinking that I know what's best. I'm playing God. Right? How do I know? Fact is, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know what's best for you. I don't know what's best for me. I clearly don't know what's best for me. If I like it, it'll probably kill me. So, you know, he says this is the how and why, but we got to quit doing. We got to quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. You know, we can just reflect on our own experience to gather that evidence, right? But here we go. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, and I really believe that this is the decision of the third step. We're going to make a decision right here. That hereafter in this drama of life, now you already set us up with that play analogy, right? On the actor who wants to run the whole show, right? But from this moment on, hereafter, from this very second on, that he's going to be the director. So how about you, why don't you get happy with your triangle, David? Why don't you try to help some of the other triangle players? You know? How about you get grateful for the fact that you're in a place you've always dreamed of being? Isn't it wonderful? when you start taking that position, you realize, you know, you never had it so good. You know, this is great. So I'm going to let him direct me. And I like that he gives me three analogies to get into here. Director, actor, prince. If you don't like that, you can go for a business analogy, principal, agent, or father, child. I work with a lot of men. Not everybody can get jiggy with the idea of a kind and loving father. How about a kind and benevolent boss? You know, how about a benevolent director of a play that you happen to be in? And so I don't spend a minute trying to determine what God's will is. This may or may be, take it if you want it, you know, leave it if you don't. But I just assume that this is it. This right here, right now is exactly what's supposed to be happening. And like Harmony was talking about, if I just accept that, then I can put my plans aside maybe, you know, when the phone call comes in or plans change or traffic happens. My God. You know, so from this moment on, I'm going to take the position, a subordinate one, to this benevolent director, this principal. I don't work for you. I don't work for me anymore. I work for him. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. And that is so important, because I thought, you know, the keystone of the arch, right? That all-important wedge stone that a craftsman has to drop in there so that the arch stays straight. I had a guy explain that to me. You know, you got a foundation of complete willingness, David. You got your defeat over here, and then you got your cornerstone of willingness to believe, and then you're going to pile up a bunch of other stones of meetings and phone calls and prayers and sponsorship and steps, and then got to have the keystone. Without that keystone, that thing, if you got the keystone, if it's right, that structure will just relax on itself, man. They'll find that thing 2,000 years from now, baby, because of that keystone. And God's that keystone. And I'm like, preach it, brother. But I saw that God wasn't the keystone. The concept was the keystone. My attitude about God is the keystone. You see, because priests die in the gutter. People that know more about God are still running their own show. Know more about God than I'll ever know. Are not willing to lay down their methods of self-defense, are not willing to give over to take a subordinate position to the director, to the principal, to the father. So the concept of father, child, principal, agent, director, actor, that is the key to the kingdom right there. And he says, we don't read it, but he says on the very next thing, when we sincerely took this position, actor, child, agent, all sorts of remarkable stuff happens after that, and the third step promises get read, which we don't read for some reason. Thank you for letting me share.
Our last reading is on page 63. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
When I was new, I thought step 3, my parents were evangelical Christians, so what I thought step 3, like I thought this was like getting down on my knees at the altar and that, okay, here we go, like they're going to send me on a mission to Africa, and I'm going to tell them about Jesus, like, and that's what I thought, like that's literally what I thought about turning my will and my life over to God. And the thing was, is that I was desperate enough to do it, and I was tired enough with my way of living that I was desperate enough to, like we had talked about all before, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the alcoholism, the pain from alcoholism, the desperation, the hopelessness, and the feeling like my life was always going to be that way was enough to bring me to my knees no matter what it was that God was going to have me do. Okay, fine, I'll go to Africa, you know, okay, whatever. I'll keep going to these AA meetings. You know, I'll do what the lady, the 55-year-old lady with the long Laura Ashley dresses tells me to do. I was willing to do anything, and that was the position that I came into on my knees. And this was a different way than I had ever prayed in my entire life. I had always prayed, get me out of this jackpot, keep me safe, like, be with me, relieve me of my anxiety, like, whatever it was at the time. But I had never said, use me. Here I am. Take my life. Take away these difficulties so that I can help others. Relieve me of myself, you know, show me how to do your will. And those are the type of prayers that I try to do all the time now. Like, because as always, you know, like my will gets in there and I'm like David, like I have ideas about how I think, you know, like if this person would just do that, like all of that's going to work out for them, and we'll spare all of them pain over here, and if my husband could just get sober, we could stay married and not have to separate and do this to our children. The place that I come back to is whatever it is that you want me to do, God, however it is that I can be of service to you today, if I never work in medicine again, if I never ever drive, have another penny in my bank account, if I never have another boyfriend, if I never if all I ever get is sobriety and being of service to other human beings and other alcoholics, then that is going to be enough for me. And it sounds like that's depressing, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's totally freeing. I have peace of mind. Like I could, I can't even describe it to you if you're new, if you've never had it. I know without a shadow of a doubt that God is taking care of my life. I know that he will take care of other people's lives. I know that the bad things are not necessarily bad. I know that the things that I hate about myself and you hate about yourself are not that, they're not these humongous skeletons. We can all outgrow those things and become useful, healthy, happy people, contributing to this world, like paying taxes and all of those type of things. Like, I believe in 100% in the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and of what the power in turning my life over to God. And he's never asked me to go to Africa and become a missionary, but you know, like I have been some places, you know, on errands for God. It is all about the experience, and I really, even when I fight it, I wouldn't trade the ultimate outcome. And when the paragraph before talks about being reborn, and for me, that's exactly what it was, because the AA and the steps took me from being a selfish, self-centered, like my life was all about me. How is this going to affect me? And I can genuinely say that I think about others, like, you know, like, I have a genuine altruism that never, like, that wasn't of me before. And the only way that that's possible is God. It's the only way that it's possible that I give a crap about other human beings is because I said this prayer and went on with the steps. That's all I have to share.
Thank you. I'll do 20 seconds.
Sorry.
No, not you. It's both of us. If selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble, if that's going to kill me if I don't get rid of it and I can't get rid of it, right, then I don't think this is a selfish program. I think this is a self-abandonment program. Let's get me out of the way so that I can do what I was meant to do. I'll just put in a little plug for right at the very bottom of the page. It says, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. This stuff we've been talking about tonight, for me, has always been a practice, not a one and done thing. I don't know, even know that I'm very good at it, but I just keep pointing myself in that direction, And let's go ahead and do the inventory now. Thanks.
All right, we're gonna pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Right on. Let's see.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Foy, alcoholic, 25 days.
Hi, Foy. Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? Literature is available at the table over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. If you would like to purchase a book, everything else is free. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, would you all please join me in thanking our panel, David and Harmony. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. Would someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
I am John.
John.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, thank you, John. We have a nice way of closing.
It is nice.
It's lovely. Whoever invented it is pretty cool.
It is nice. I like nice better than
you. You did?
Yeah.
No. No. Is that what you're saying? Oh, it looks shorter.
I like a letter that Chris is starting out with it.
Okay, our Father.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Yes.
Thank you very much.